Advantage by Resonant, read by Dodificus. When they climbed out of the jumper, Elizabeth looked at the mark between Shepherd's eyebrows, and then she exchanged a glance with Carson, and then she shot an expectant look at Rodney. Terrific. Why not Ford and Taylor? Why did he have to be the object of the please explain now look? Listen, before you say anything, it wasn't my idea and it wasn't my fault, he said. Exactly what? Elizabeth began. I mean, I know it might appear on the surface as though this works to my advantage, but I am just as unhappy about it as Major Shepherd is, believe me. Tell me what, and whatever the Athusang city guards may claim, I was not treating Major Shepherd like a servant. I was treating Major Shepherd exactly the way I always treat him. Which you have to admit is a little, Shepherd began. Let me finish, Rodney said, raising a hand. Shepherd broke off in mid-word. That was novel enough that it took Rodney a couple of seconds to get back on track. Right, so the city guards are going to claim that they observed our behaviour, decided Major Shepherd was my personal servant or my bodyguard or whatever, and then treated him according to the traditional dictates of the Athusang. Athusang, Taylor corrected him. Let's not get hung up on the details here, Rodney said. Because how many interruptions could one conversation sustain? The point is, the guards looked the four of us over and decided which one it would be to their advantage to remove from the negotiation, and they picked the Major and slapped that slave marking device on his forehead without asking anyone, and after that no one would listen to him. And they know something about race strategy and tactics, but the other three of us didn't have Major Shepherd's odd little knack for negotiation by randomness. Hey, Shepherd protested. And so we got nowhere, revealed our presence and showed them the gate and the jumper for nothing. And now Major Shepherd thinks he's my slave, and just please, please tell me you can undo this, Carson, because I can't have him tagging after me like an oversized kid brother. Hey, Shepherd said irritably. He seems all right, Elizabeth said. Major, Ronnie tossed him three of the very delicious karma nuts that were the one and only good thing to come of this trip. Here, juggle. I can't juggle, Shepherd said, sending two of them flying at once. Never had the knack, he went on as the third one joined them. Three perfect parabolas over and over. Elizabeth glanced at Rodney and back at Shepherd. Looks like you can, she said. No, I've tried, Shepherd said, still tossing nuts. I always drop them. For a long moment they all watched Shepherd juggle, and then Rodney said, you can quit any time you want. Okay, Shepherd said. Hey, cool, watch this. And he switched to a circle pattern. Toss me another one. He caught it in midair and sent it flying with the rest. So hey, Rodney said, you can do impossible things if I tell you to. Go walk on the ceiling. Shepherd gave him a look of withering scorn. Right. At least it doesn't seem to have affected his personality, Elizabeth said. The mark on Shepherd's forehead was dark blue and roughly circular. Taylor said it might be a letter from the Athusang alphabet, but it was too smudged to be sure. Carson scraped a bit of it off, a process which took some skin cells too, and allowed Shepherd to strike a number of stoic poses, and discovered it was nothing but an unusually persistent sort of vegetable dye. That's good, he said. I imagine what we'll find in his bloodstream will be an agent that increases suggestibility, perhaps combined with a mild depressant. They come up unexpectedly and poke his forehead with something sharp. You see, they tell him he's a slave, everyone treats him like a slave, he comes to believe he's a slave. What he actually found in Shepherd's bloodstream after an hour's worth of testing wiped the smile off his face. I've never seen the like, he said in a hushed voice, eyes never leaving the display where a molecule went on rotating. It's not unlike a virus, and you can see the lipid envelope. Very fascinating, really. Already Major Shepherd's body is beginning to produce something analogous to antibodies. He pulled up another display. It looked like some sort of dog toy. Based on the behaviours of these bodies and laboratory conditions, I'm guessing the majority of the infection should be overcome in 24 hours. So what, we wait? Aye, we wait. And you don't tell him to do anything that's hazardous to his health. I'm not going to tell him to do anything at all, Rodney said, because I'm going to be very busy pulling the science team's collective head out of its collective arse for the rest of the day. But that was where the next complication came up, because Shepard, who had left for his own errands, came drifting back almost immediately and lurked around the edge of Rodney's peripheral vision until Rodney broke off brainstorming with Zelenka to say irritably, "What?"
"What?"
"Nothing." "Why are you here?" Shepard shrugged. "Nowhere else to be." "So you thought you'd come and pester?" "Wait, are you feeling some sort of compulsion to stay close to me?" Shepard rolled his eyes. "Yes, me and the birds and the stars and..." "Major Shepard, tell me, is a stupid alien slave virus making you stay close to me?"
"Yes," Shepard said, glaring at him.
"They made him your slave? Pity it wasn't someone prettier," Zelenka said.
"Tell me about it," Rodney said.
"Well," he went on to Shepard, "how do you feel about making yourself useful and bringing us something to eat?" Shepard didn't trot off like a good slave, and he didn't roll his eyes like normal Shepard. He shifted from foot to foot, and then said, in a choked tone that suggested he was speaking under protest, "I feel conflicted."
"Oh my God, I've made you talk about your feelings. That stuff is strong," Rodney said.
"All right, let me rephrase that. Describe the slave thing's conflicting impulses."
Shepard's shoulders came down a couple of inches. "It wants me to do what you want, but it also wants me to stay in earshot. Maybe it's because you didn't give a direct order."
"Well, that's easy. Go down to the mess and get lunch for all three of us."
"I'll expect a good tip," Shepard said and left. Zelenka was giving him an "I can't believe you just did that" look. Not that that was unusual.
"He'll feel better if he keeps busy," Rodney said.
"Hey," Shepard said as Rodney arrived in the gate room. "Just who I wanted to see. Tell me to hang from the top railing." Rodney looked up at the second floor railing.
"What, you're a chimpanzee now?"
"Come on," Shepard wheedled. "I can almost do it by myself, see?" And he took an enormous upward leap, a hang from the backboard sort of leap. His hands didn't come anywhere near the railing, though they did go well above the level of the upper floor.
"So you're thinking an order from me is going to add half a meter to your vertical jump? This is the sort of thing that gets people thrown out of the Olympics in disgrace."
Shepard just went on looking at him expectantly, and Ford and Elizabeth and Bates turned their expectant looks from him to Rodney and back again.
"Fine, Major. Jump up and hang from the railing if it makes you happy."
Before he even finished the sentence, he was looking at Shepard's boots. They dangled at face level for a few moments, and then Shepard crashed heavily to the floor, laughing.
"Did you see that? That was so cool. Watch."
And he did it again. "Maybe if it makes you happy is a functional part of the order," Elizabeth mused, "and his mind interprets that to mean any time you want to."
"Or," Ford panted from midair, "he could do it all along and the order just unlocked his potential."
His unassisted high jump was a bit higher than Shepard's had been, but not high enough to allow him to touch the rail.
"Wish you could do that for me."
"Any time you need someone to order you to do something useful," Rodney began, and was interrupted by the thud of Shepard coming down again. "Come on," he was saying, beaming. "Let's go get a jumper and find out what's a mechanical limit and what's a human one." "Suppose I ordered you to go away," Rodney said 4 hours later, when Shepard had taken the dirty dishes back to the mess and fetched a dropped whiteboard marker and eaten way more than his share of karma nuts, and made Rodney look really bad in front of Zelenka by pointing out that he'd factored in water pressure on the subaqueous shields twice in different places.
"I'd do it, but I wouldn't be able to relax until I could hear you."
They'd arrived at Rodney's room, which was definitely out of earshot of Shepard's. Shepard was yawning.
"Okay, fine. Go get a mattress or a cot or something and you can sleep on the floor. But just this once," Rodney said.
"Oh, and hey, see if you can find me a blanket made out of something found in nature. I think this one is spun out of milk bottles." When Rodney woke up the next morning, Shepard was sitting up watching him. His eyebrows were pulled together.
"Is it worn off? Snap your fingers." Shepard snapped his fingers glumly. That's not all. What? Is there something new? You're hungry. You have a slight caffeine withdrawal headache. Your elbows are dried up because the sheets are rougher than you used to. Who knew you were such a princess, McKay? Your right shoulder and the back of your neck are stiff. And, your bladder is full. Rodney felt himself flushing, because that last one was clearly a euphemism that meant Shepard had noticed that parts of Rodney greeted the new day with more enthusiasm than the rest of him, which he couldn't take care of in his usual morning way because Shepard was in his room. "Why, thank you, Dr. Shepard," he snapped. "And how's my cardiovascular health today?" "Pretty poor," Shepard said. "Don't you get it? This thing is telling me everything you need and pushing me to do something about it." "Geez, these people can do that?" "McKay, I have an almost irresistible desire to come put lotion on your elbows. Please give me something to do." "Give me some of those Karma nuts out of the desk drawer," Rodney said hastily, "and then you can have the shower first." Rodney looked glumly at the closed shower door, wondering whether it was worse to have Shepard know he was hard, or to have Shepard know why he wasn't anymore. Pretty much took care of that problem. When Shepard came out of the bathroom, he brought a glass of water and stood over Rodney, glowering damply, until Rodney drank it all. And then he said, "That's better," and sat down on Rodney's bed and started cutting his toenails with Rodney's clippers. "Ooh," Rodney said, "cut that out." Shepard stopped immediately. His face was freshly scrubbed and shaved, and he looked ridiculously wholesome, except for the murderous glare. "What?" Rodney said. "I don't care if you're in chemical bondage. I don't want your toenail clippings on my bed. Go do that someplace else." Still glaring, Shepard went and sat in Rodney's desk chair. Rodney gave up and went to take a shower. There was nothing unusual about having Shepard eating breakfast with him, and nothing really unusual about his behaviour there, at least after Rodney told him, "I want you to do whatever you want to do, as long as it doesn't involve telling me what to eat and what not to eat." It was unusual to have Shepard lingering around the lab instead of getting on with his own life. "Don't you have work you need to be doing?" Rodney said after Shepard had brought him another glass of water, located his laser pointer under 2 weeks' worth of power grid printouts, and turned off a lamp that Rodney hadn't even noticed was bothering his eyes. "I mean, I would imagine that there are things to glare at, things to shoot, things to fly really fast." So Shepard left, but after half an hour he drifted back in to hand Rodney an antacid tablet. Rodney sighed. "Look, tell me what you need to be doing and I'll order you to do it. Normally I'll be getting ready to hear everyone's weekly reports." "All right, fine. I order you to go get ready for your reports." It was actually kind of fun to say, "I order you," to someone who took it seriously. And he got into the role a bit, giving a regal wave of his hand. Zelenka snorted behind him. Shepard rolled his eyes and said, "Yes, sir," with amazing insincerity, and left. And half an hour later, he was back again with a painkiller and yet another glass of water, saying, "Jesus, Rodney, lay off whatever you're drinking before you give yourself a coronary." Rodney, who'd been drinking something that the Edovan considered a path to achieving godhead, and they were only exaggerating a little, said, "Shut up." For once, Shepard actually did. But then he paced and twitched until Rodney said, "Fine, say what you've got to say." "I need to hear briefings, and I can't because you won't take care of your immediate physical needs." "Unless you gave birth to me and I've forgotten, my immediate physical needs are none of your business," Rodney said, "and I wish you'd leave me alone." "I wish I could, believe me," Shepard said, rubbing his temples. Rodney hated to be charmed by what everyone else was charmed by, but Shepard looked so ruffled that his resolve took a serious hit. "Perhaps if you ordered him not to pay attention to you," Zelenka said. "Sure, why not? Don't pay attention to me, Major." Shepard's eyes squeezed shut. "Ow, ow, paradox," he said, grimacing. "Christ, that's even worse. Brain's like a hamster on a wheel." "Okay, never mind," Rodney said. Shepard relaxed all at once. "Thanks." In the end, Rodney had to actually go with him to the briefings, which were unimaginably tedious. Worse yet, he had to roll his head around to loosen up his neck muscles and prevent himself from feeling tense and restless, because as soon as he did, Shepard felt compelled to help, and nothing brought a military briefing to a halt faster than the commanding officer stopping to say, "Deep breaths, McKay." When the last of the military people had filed out, Ronnie and Shepard looked at each other. "So, obviously missions are out until this thing wears off," Rodney said. "I'll tell Elizabeth. You go get lunch." "I thought I was the one giving orders," Rodney said. "And eat something with fibre in it. Jeez." "Carson, it's getting worse," he said. "He can read my mind now, and he won't leave me alone." "You can read his mind?" "Not exactly," Shepard said, and stopped, and opened his mouth, and closed it again. "Oh, go ahead and tell him. My personal boundaries are gone already," Rodney said. Shepard shot him one of those "you asked for it" looks. "He has a tension headache around his eyes," he said to Carson. "His right arm and shoulder and the back of his neck are stiff. Sometimes he gets shooting pains in his upper trapezius. That Ativan stuff he drinks makes his heart pound and his hands shake. He forgets to eat and then he remembers and stuffs some random thing down in 4 bites and gets a stomach ache. I'm not going to get into the state of his digestion. I don't know how long it's been since he got laid, but it's clearly far too..." Hey, stop," Rodney said. Shepard gave him a reproachful look. "Don't you know better than to issue a command without parameters?" "You're not a computer," Rodney said, "and I know this because computers don't whine. It's one of the things I like about them." "You know, Rodney," Carson said, "the Etal wasn't meant to be consumed like coffee. The Erdogan drink it in wee cups the size of eggshells, in a controlled environment, with foods that may neutralize some of the effects." "Were we here to talk about my habits? Because maybe I'm insane, but I could have sworn we were here because Major Shepard still has an alien drug in his system that makes him think he's my personal body servant." Carson turned to Shepard and opened his mouth to ask a question, and they both glanced at Rodney. "I'll leave," Rodney said. "No," Shepard said anxiously, and Carson looked from one to the other. "That's another thing," Rodney said. "It makes him nervous if he's out of earshot of me, unless I've sent him on an errand. Major, I'm going to step outside because I want you to be able to speak freely to your doctor about what your options are. And while you've never shown any particular compunction about hurting my delicate feelings, I don't trust this thing to let you think straight unless I tell you that's what I want." "Rodney," Shepard said, "stay." And he wasn't pleading or anything. His voice had no expression at all, but Rodney stayed. Carson couldn't do anything about the problem. The virus was still detectable in Shepard's bloodstream, and he had no idea why the antibodies weren't working. He'd located a chemical that neutralized the virus in a test tube. The drawback was that it was very, very poisonous. "I do still think your body ought to be able to take care of this on its own," Carson said, "though I admit I thought it would have done already. If you don't mind my saying so, you've never been one to relish doing what you're told," he went on, which was like saying up was up. "I'm surprised you're taking this so well." "He isn't telling me what to do," Shepard said. "Much." "Ow!" Carson pressed Shepard's fingers over the spot where he'd withdrawn the needle. "Anyhow, he could use some looking after. You wouldn't believe the things he..." "Yes, thank you. That will be enough on that subject," Rodney said. "Hey, Major, if you're done getting blood drained, go get that other laptop, will you? It's on the table next to my bed." "You're very comfortable ordering him around," Carson said. "I've always thought that a truly civilized society would find a way to liberate superior minds from tedious busy work," Rodney said. "Besides, he's military. It makes him happy to have orders to follow." "Oh, certainly," Carson said. But it did make Shepard happy. When he brought back the laptop, he looked more relaxed than he had since they came back from Suthon. "Is it possible that the mark rewards him for obedience?" Rodney asked. "Aye, it's possible," Carson admitted. "Or it may keep up a low-grade pain or discomfort stimulus, which fades only when he has an order to follow." "See," Rodney said, "it's for his own good." After a blissfully Shepard-free afternoon, during which he'd eaten 2 things that were very much like apples, not that he planned to admit that to Shepard, Rodney returned to his room and found that a cot had been moved in and set against the wall at right angles to his bed. He stopped short at the invasion of his personal space, and while he was staring, Shepherd skidded around the corner. "Oh," he said when he saw what Rodney was looking at. "Yeah," Rodney said. "I suppose protests would be futile?" Shepherd gave him a pleading look and Rodney sighed. "All right, never mind. You can be my roommate if that's what you need. Just please don't give me tips on regulating my digestion in front of Lieutenant Johansson anymore. She's a beautiful woman, and I'd like to retain some shred of personal dignity." "Well," Shepherd said after a minute, "I was in the middle of a jog." "I'd never have guessed," Rodney said, looking at the ring of sweat that darkened the collar of his t-shirt. "Go get changed and you can come with me." "I don't jog," Rodney said. "I don't run for recreation. I run when someone's after me with a weapon." "That can be arranged," Shepherd muttered, and they lurked around Rodney's door for so long that Rodney gave in and went jogging with him just to get rid of him. It actually wasn't so bad. He never had to humiliate himself by saying "slow down," because Shepherd could sense when he was out of breath without being told, so it was pretty easy to settle into a reasonable pace. Shepherd led him past the water treatment area and out a door he'd seen a million times, and suddenly they were actually outside. They jogged around a wide curve with the city on one side and the apparently endless sea on the other, and then out a long pier with the sea on both sides, and then up a short flight of stairs to a circular platform where they could see forever in every direction. The city looked tiny and misty behind them, and Rodney suddenly realized two things: that he never went outside except on missions, when mortal danger tended to mute his appreciation of the fresh air, and that this was closer to genuine solitude than he'd had since he came to Atlantis. "Hey," he said to Shepherd, "this is great." "Thought you'd like it," Shepherd said. There was something very much like real bacon in the mess the next day, which Rodney, not being an early riser at the best of times, would have missed if Shepherd hadn't grabbed him a plateful and left it on the desk beside his bed. He'd left a big glass of water there too, with some ice still in it, and he'd moved the laptop over to the other desk so he wouldn't have to worry about spills. Of course, it would have been nicer to have someone fussing over him because he liked him, rather than because he was under chemical compulsion to take care of all his bodily needs, Rodney thought with his mouth full of bacon, but this wasn't bad. Shepherd returned as Rodney was eating the last of the bacon. He glared at Rodney. "You didn't..." "Never mind." "Spit it out, Major." "You didn't jerk off." "Jesus!" Rodney covered his eyes with his hand. "Next time I tell you to say what's on your mind, remind me that I don't really want to know." "But it was the whole reason I left." "Oh, you gave me 15 minutes. How generous of you."
"You need longer than 15 minutes? What do you do? Interpretive dance?"
"What I need is real privacy, which apparently I'm not ever going to have again. I mean, put yourself in my shoes. If I were lurking outside your door, knowing..." "I don't lurk, and I can't not know. And if you don't do something about it, it's going to start taking care of itself in your sleep. And I'll be forced to know about that too. So think about it. So I'm going to go out again. Is half an hour long enough, or do you need me to wait until lunchtime?"
"This is not going to happen, and the more you talk to me about it, the more you make sure it's not going to happen."
Shepherd gave him a smirk that told Rodney he'd noticed that Rodney was lying. But how? This kind of conversation would be a turn-on for a lot of people. He wouldn't be surprised if Shepherd himself... well, he was certainly not going to look. "Fine," he snapped. "Go take a nice long jog, and then go take a nice long shower in your own room, and keep your telepathy turned off, please." "I don't have telepathy. I just know when you need something. And if I could turn it off, I would. Believe me. Because sometimes what you need is a swift kick." He left with the attitude of someone who was pissed that the door wouldn't slam. "Way to inspire my libido there," Rodney said into the quiet, well-mannered hiss of the door. He'd never had to jerk off on demand, and as he assembled his lube and his washcloth, it seemed like the most joyless thing he could imagine. and he wanted not to, except that Shepard was out there, and he knew what Roddy needed. His cock stirred in his loose hold. What the hell was that? He glared down at it as though it could explain itself. He was getting off on knowing that Shepard was out there somewhere, killing time, waiting for him to jerk off. He wondered if Shepard could tell that he'd gotten started, if he'd be following along. God, yes. This was doing something for him, for real. He pressed two fingers into the base of his cock. Not that he needed anything to make him any harder. He was doing just fine in that respect. And made a ring of his other thumb and forefinger, twisting just below the head, making it last. Shepard apparently thought he'd do it fast. Maybe that was the way he liked it himself. Oh, God. If he could tell what Ronnie was doing, maybe he'd learn something. That sweet sensation of going right up to the edge and staying there, until your breath came hard and you could feel your heart racing, until your hands shook and your eyes squeezed shut and your lips pulled back, just like that. Maybe he'd never tried it. Maybe he was heading back to his quarters now, cock heavy in his running shorts. Maybe he was going to try it right now. Coming was like a fist clenching over and over. And he hung on through it, gentling his hand and holding on. Gentle enough and slick enough, and you could keep it going. No spasms, but shivery pleasure right on the edge of pain for a few minutes. Until either you got hard again, or your body finally said enough. He wondered if Shepard knew about that, if he ever... The picture pushed another quick squeeze out of him. Okay, fine, fine. A little belated self-awareness, that was fine, he got it already. Either he had a thing for guys, or he had a thing for an audience that was so strong that the identity of the audience didn't matter much. Fine. There was something to be said, actually, for learning this stuff about yourself when you were past the who am I anxiety, he thought, as he wiped off and headed for the shower. It would have freaked him right out at 16, but here he was, full of endorphins and well-being, and apparently either bisexual or an exhibitionist, or possibly both, and he felt fine. When he came out in his shorts and t-shirt, Shepard was lying on the cot, also freshly showered, smirking at him. Feel better? Do you? Rodney asked him, because there was no way Shepard hadn't just been up to the same thing. He hadn't remembered to put the lube away. It was still out there on the desk, but he couldn't bring himself to care. We have to do something about this, Elizabeth said when Shepard followed Rodney into a science team briefing. Rodney looked at him. Having Shepard following him everywhere had stopped seeming strange to him. And anyway, one of the agenda items was finding some way to make the jumpers more power efficient, which was something Shepard actually knew something useful about. But if it was a problem for Elizabeth, he'd fix it. He can leave if I send him on an errand. Want him to bring up some of the karma nuts? Elizabeth shook her head like he was some kind of selfish jerk, which was totally unfair. She was the one who wanted Shepard gone. I meant something about the continued effects on Major Shepard's free will, though I know you don't want to sacrifice your personal fiefdom. Hey, Rodney said, waving his hand at the scientists around the table. These are my personal fiefdom, thank you very much. Major Shepard is a colleague suffering from an alien attack. Which, I remind you, is not my fault. But of course, it never did any good to talk to these people. Anyhow, Carson's only managed to upgrade the antidote from fatal to almost fatal. How bad is it? Elizabeth asked Shepard. Shepard's eyes cut sideways to Rodney. Go ahead, Rodney said. Tell her the truth. Something happened to Shepard's face, but he said to Elizabeth, It's not too bad. The virus makes it all feel normal. I miss going off-world, though. It's boring just hanging around, washing McKay's socks. Figure of speech, Rodney said hastily. He's only done that once. Outside the door of the meeting room, Shepard rounded on him with the narrow-eyed look he usually reserved for wraith ships. Do not order me to tell the truth in front of Elizabeth and the science staff, he said. Rodney had seen people mistake that voice for a friendly drawl, but only people who didn't know Shepard very well. What? You wanted to lie and you couldn't. Have you ever been under physical compulsion to answer every question truthfully? She could have asked me anything.
I'll rig up a pentothal drip for you and you can see what it's like, he said, and stalked off. He was still gone when Rodney went to bed, which meant either that the compulsion was weakening or he was very seriously pissed off. Rodney really needed to cut out the Etel. It was beginning to interfere with his sleep. By the fourth day, it was obvious that Shepherd's antibodies weren't going to do the trick unassisted. So I think we need to send a team back to Suthong to get information and hopefully find a cure, Elizabeth said to the hastily assembled group in the lab. Radek, would you be able to represent the science side?
Wait, hold on, Rodney objected. He was pleased to see that Shepherd was shaking his head too. If you're sending a team back to Suthong, it needs to be the same team.
But you and Major Shepherd have both told me that the off-world missions aren't safe for him, due to his condition.
Yes, I remember, thank you, and I stand by that. But there are special circumstances here that...
Major, back me up on this.
No, wait, don't. Say anything you want, or nothing.
McKay's right, Shepherd said. If we send a different team, they'd probably pull the same stunt on one of them. But they know us, and they can see the mark, so they can't pretend to misunderstand.
Right, exactly. Plus, who knows better than we do about what to ask?
Of course they won't let him speak, so he'll have to give one of us his input beforehand. But at least he'll be there, and he can signal me, us, if something's not adding up.
I want them to look me in the eye and tell me there's nothing they can do, Shepherd said in a dangerous voice. And Elizabeth said, well, all right then.
As it turned out, the Suthong didn't look Shepherd in the eye and tell him, because they didn't look at him at all. Once they spotted the mark on his face, they paid no more attention to him than they would have paid to a horse. In fact, Rodney had to prevent them from taking him away to be cleaned and fed. The jerk with the floppy hair who'd ordered this done in the first place was unavailable. The new jerk with floppy hair told them blandly that he couldn't understand why the effect wasn't wearing off. They had long-term marks, of course, for their own slaves, but they used the one-day mark for visitors. A dead-eyed, middle-aged man with a red mark on his forehead was ordered over, and he stood, not moving or raising his eyes, while Carson drew blood and scraped skin. He didn't answer Carson's questions until ordered to do so, and then he used a voice that sounded like it hadn't been used for years. Rodney looked at Shepherd, trying to imagine him shuffling around with his head chemically emptied of everything but the desire to obey. But Shepherd was looking satisfyingly tight-lipped and smouldery, even back in the jumper when he wordlessly went over to the medkit and handed Rodney a band-aid for his blister before taking the pilot seat. At least they got more carminates, so it wasn't an entirely wasted trip. That night, Shepherd was so full of snappy comebacks, got in so many sly put-downs on Rodney, that Rodney was momentarily reassured. Until it occurred to him that Shepherd was giving him what he needed most, namely some reassurance that he was still himself, and not really a slave at all. Evidently, your master needs you to pretend he isn't your master. Wasn't the kind of paradox that hurt Shepherd's head. Carson, when they could get him to look up from the apparently fascinating puzzle of the two pseudoviruses, confirmed that the chemistry of the permanent bond was totally different. All he could do was keep working on reducing the toxicity of the antidote. "You're tense," Shepherd said. Rodney rolled his eyes. "Thanks very much," he said. "That's like saying, you're breathing." "You're making me tense. If you're wound this tight all the time, it really explains your personality."
No, my personality would make perfect sense if you met my family," Rodney said, putting away a laptop, because what he needed was on another laptop, and why the hell had he ever thought networking the personal machines was a secondary priority? "My tension, on the other hand, is a direct result of the utter, blinding incompetence of Samtow and Mitchell, which I suppose could be traced to their parents. Maybe it was on the first laptop after all." Shepherd was wincing as though Rodney was making loud noises in his ear. "If it's that bad for you, Major, you could make yourself useful. Either find the power consumption projections file or give me a back rub." Shepherd handed him a folder. Mitchell does projections on paper, remember? You had quite an extensive analysis of the problems that entailed at the last briefing, but she has some sort of mystical compulsion. That left the back rub. Ronnie looked at him hopefully.
Sorry, Shepherd said. Can't help you. Don't know how.
You don't know how to give a back rub?
I don't know how to give a back rub that doesn't end up in bed.
Figures. Ronnie rolled his head forward. The muscles in his neck twanged like rubber bands. He was pretty sure he'd rather have a back rub than sex, which was kind of sad commentary, actually.
I don't know, he said. Try me.
Shepherd's palms spread out large and warm on his shoulders. He hadn't had a back rub from a guy since the collapse of the web boom had killed off the phenomenon of the corporate masseur. But the bigger hands were definitely an advantage. And Shepherd's thumbs went unerringly to the worst spots, with just exactly the right pressure. Whoa. Semi-telepathic contact was even more of an advantage. Shepherd's hands pushed a glob of fiery muscle up each side of Rodney's neck and out, leaving behind a streak of absence of pain that was better than pleasure. Shepherd groaned when Rodney did. Is it that bad for you? Rodney was full of back rub generated affection, which was just as bad as the alcohol generated kind.
Same as it is for you, except I keep trying to loosen up my back and fix my posture, and nothing helps because it's not my body.
Shepherd did the same thing again, starting from lower down on Rodney's shoulder blades, and Rodney sighed happily. If you did some ab work, your spine would be better supported, and your neck wouldn't hurt all the time. Or, alternately, if a genie came and gave me a set of magic wings.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right there, he added unnecessarily, because of course Shepherd knew it was a good spot, and he went to work on it.
God, yes. Raise your right arm, Shepherd said, and worked all along that shoulder. Can't you do some of your touchpad work left-handed? Rodney didn't even dignify that with an answer. Just dropped his head forward, because it seemed likely that something nice would happen if he did. Shepherd's hand stilled on his shoulders for a second, and Rodney could feel it all shifting gears, even before Shepherd ran his nails lightly up the back of Rodney's neck, making him hiss at the goose flesh rising on his arms. He couldn't even say it wasn't what he wanted, because it felt fantastic. He was just as hungry for this kind of touch as he had been for the back rub. For just a second, his whole imagination flamed up with the idea of what it would be like with someone who could sense his desires and had a compulsion to feel every one, and he closed his eyes. And then he reluctantly brought his sanity back online and opened them again. Yeah, that's... I see what you mean about your back rubs, he said. Yeah, Shepherd said. It was probably going to hurt him just as much to walk away as it was going to hurt Rodney. Weird how it was so hard to give it up when it wasn't really what either of them wanted in the first place. And the stupid slave thing was going to make Shepherd hurt because Rodney wouldn't let him give him what he needed. Rodney rubbed his eyes with the heel of his hands. All right, he said, turning in his chair. All right, no, I think not. But you know what? Why don't we go down to the weight room and you can show me how to do the ab machine?
God, he had to be the biggest idiot in the world. There was something badly wrong with his life when he was prepared to turn down one of those kinds of back rubs and in favour of sit-ups, for crying out loud.
Shepherd raised his head with a look of utter, adoring gratitude, as though he'd already thought Rodney was the greatest thing since crunchy peanut butter, and Rodney had just proved he was grape jelly too. It was just the virus, Rodney told himself, and grinned back at him. Okay, right, let's get this suffering over with. Rodney woke up next morning with a strange, not unpleasant, tightness in his stomach muscles, and a completely familiar tightness elsewhere. Thank heavens Shepherd had finally learned just to give him some peace in the mornings, without having to have a big conversation about what he needed privacy for. If he'd let that back rub go where it wanted to go, it would have ended up, well, here in his bed, actually. He tried to put a more appealing partner into the picture as a person dedicated to fulfilling his every need. Lieutenant Johansson with her hair out of that long braid. That Athosian woman with the freckles who sometimes came with hauling from the mainland. Shelley, who'd cut his hair back home. but it seemed weird and creepy to imagine getting this kind of service from women he hardly knew, even though both Johansson and Maria were probably stronger than he was, and Shelley was always armed with a pair of sharp scissors. Maybe if she wasn't drugged, but was doing it out of gratitude, because he'd saved her life and her family and her village. Because on her planet, average-looking but brilliant astrophysicists with poor social skills were the ultimate objects of desire. Because a broken gate had stranded them together on a planet for a year and she'd come to revere him? Jesus, what good was an imagination if it was going to insist on a higher level of plausibility than his real life did? Alright, fine, damn it. Suppose it was Shepard himself, who actually seemed to like him, who, weirdly enough, knew him better than anybody had since grade school, who could make bad jokes at his expense, even under the influence of an alien slave virus, who made moany sex noises while giving him a back rub. Oh hell, I just figured that would work when nothing else did. He let himself imagine it. Shepard's nails running lightly up the back of his neck again, Shepard's lips following them. Shepard's arms wrapping around him and leaning him back against that warm body. Shepard's mouth on his ear and his face and his mouth, because physical pleasure was nice, very nice. But if he was going to get his dearest wish, it would be for something that went deeper. No. No. He was willing to be pathetic up to a point, but there had to be limits. Shepard's hands on his body then, knowing what he needed before he knew it himself. Shepard's mouth. Shepard's mouth. Oh God, it would be so good. End of part 1.